Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech Prime Minister has denounced the partial mobilization announced by President Putin as an attempt to further escalate the war with Ukraine. The head of Czech diplomacy has said Czechia will never recognize the outcome of the pseudo-referendums that Moscow plans to hold in the occupied eastern regions of Ukraine. And ANO leader Andrej Babiš has backtracked on an earlier promise to leave politics. The partial mobilization announced on Wednesday morning by Russian President Vladimir Putin is an attempt to further escalate the war in Ukraine and is further proof that Russia is the only aggressor in the conflict, Prime Minister Petr Fiala said in a statement to the Czech news agency. Mr. Putin made the announcement of partial mobilization in a televised speech broadcast at 9 a.m. Moscow time. Some 300,000 members of the military reserve forces will be called up, and the mobilization should begin immediately, according to local sources. According to former chief of the general staff Yuri Shegevy, the partial mobilization announced by President Putin shows that Russia has reached a turning point in the war when it desperately needs new recruits in order to avoid losing conquered territory in Ukraine. This may create a difficult situation for the country on the front because although Russia will not have better troops, it will have an advantage in quantity, General Shegevy said. He noted that much would depend on how the Russians use the mobilization units, since the troops will need several weeks to align and master the more sophisticated equipment. Czechia will never recognize the outcome of the pseudo-referendums that Moscow plans to hold in the occupied eastern regions of Ukraine, Czech Foreign Minister Jan Lipavský wrote on Twitter. Mr. Lipavský said the referendums were an obvious attempt to annex more Ukrainian territory, as happened in the case of Crimea, adding that they constituted a flagrant violation of international law for which Moscow must be held accountable. The European Union warned earlier that if Russia presses ahead with annexation referendums in Ukraine's occupied eastern areas, it would not recognize the result and would prepare potential new sanctions against Moscow. ANO party leader Andrej Babiš has backtracked on his earlier claim that he will not run for re-election as party chief or contest a seat in parliament in the next general elections due in 2025. In an interview for the CTK news agency, Mr. Babiš said he was no longer ruling out the possibility that he would remain in politics, since a lot of things had happened to make him reconsider the move. There has been speculation regarding his potential candidacy for president in the 2023 election, but Mr. Babiš has refused to disclose his decision until October. More than 70% of employers are feeling considerable pressure for wage hikes from employees or job seekers compared to January this year, according to a survey by the Hays Recruitment Agency. The majority of companies said they were resisting an across-the-board wage increase to make up for inflation, preferring to increase wages individually and use perks such as extra holidays and home office as an added bonus. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. Thursday should be partly cloudy with scattered showers and day temperatures between 12 and 16 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Coming up in the programme, Literature Night has come round again, and we look at what this popular annual event will bring this year. And then on a sad note, we look at how the late Barbara Winton, daughter of Sir Nicholas Winton, worked to promote her father's legacy during her lifetime. Later on, we'll take you on a trip to Prague's Jewish Quarter, courtesy of Ruth Frankova. Stay with us. The annual Literature Night, which has become the largest European literature project of its kind in Czechia since it was introduced to the country 16 years ago, is taking place across 80 venues in the country's capital and regions this Wednesday evening. There will also be readings in several other cities across Europe, Africa, Asia and the United States. The event is chiefly being organized by the country's network of Czech centers. Tom McEncrow spoke to Adriana Krasová, who is heading the project.
In Prague, it is held at 20 venues because we cooperate with a network of European cultural institutes and embassies. The readings start at 6 o'clock, and every hour there are two readings. The actors are well-known actors from Czech theatres, and each of them read the text that has been selected at one venue. So the audience, they circulate around the neighbourhood, and they can participate in the reading. So this is how it is organized. As to the selection of books, we focus on contemporary literature, so mainly on books that have been translated and published in the Czech Republic within the two previous years. So usually it's books from this year and the last year. So contemporary literature, contemporary perspectives, contemporary ways of seeing the world. So that is what we sort of highlight in the literature night.
And I understand that for the first time you also have readings for the deaf. How is that exactly going to work in practice?
Well, because the subtitle of this year's event is Openness and Togetherness. Openness for those who are able to participate in the readings but can't enjoy it to the full. And also the focus of all the literature night is on different languages, because 20 countries participate. So we decided to add one more language, which is the language of the deaf. At 5 reading places, 2 readings will be interpreted into the sign language. So we cooperate with the Faculty of Arts, with the Department of the Language for the Deaf, and also with several organizations of the deaf. And at the same time, non-deaf participants can learn at some mini workshops the basics of the language.
All right. And this year the festival is taking place along the Czech EU presidency. There will be readings organised by Czech centres and embassies as well across many European capitals. You've also got readings in Asia, Africa, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So the Czech centres across 4 continents, they organise their literature night together with some associations, or usually with other European countries. So it depends on the context in which they operate. So it's not only the Czech centres, as you said, it's also the embassies, and they cooperate with professional organisations and a UNIC network, which is the Association of National European Cultural Institutes. So it depends on, for example, if we speak about the Czech book, so what books have been translated into their language recently, and they, in some cases, they invite the author to introduce the book. It varies from country to country.
I saw that also there will be a reading in the Czech Centre in New York. Could you tell us when that's coming up and what will it focus on?
Yeah, in New York it's called European Literature Nights. It should be held on the 17th of November. And it will be held at the Ukrainian Institute. So they expect participation of 10 countries. And Czech literature will be represented by Bianca Belová, who will also be present at tonight.
This isn't the first literature night you've taken part in. Why should one maybe attend it?
Well, I think it is a unique mosaic of European thinking, and the topics are, or the issues that are addressed in the Czech Republic. As I said, there is a certain synergy of the venue, which we select very carefully, of the voice of the actor presenting it, and of course the text that always brings something new, the way the world is perceived, etc. So to learn something new, what the authors are writing about, what they are concerned with, I think that it's extremely interesting.
Adriana Krásová, head of the popular annual Literature Night project, which is due this very evening, on Wednesday evening. Moving on now, Barbara Winton, daughter of the late Sir Nicholas Winton, devoted much of her life to sharing the story of how her father, as a young man, aged only 29, helped to organise the transport of 669 mostly Jewish children from Czechoslovakia before the outbreak of World War II, thereby saving them from almost certain death in Nazi concentration camps. Now she herself has passed away, but her father's legacy still lives on, Anna Fodor reports.
Sir Nicholas Winton lived to the quite remarkable age of 106, before passing away peacefully in his sleep on 1st July 2015, 76 years to the day since one of the Kinder transport trains he helped organise, containing 241 children, departed from Prague. Unfortunately, his daughter, Barbara Winton, did not live to such a venerable age. Her family announced that she had passed away on Tuesday at the age of 68 after a long illness. During her lifetime, Barbara had been committed to spreading her father's message of kindness and hope, as she said in this interview for Radio Prague back in 2018.
I think that one of the important things about life is that people have a decent standard of living if possible, and that they're kind to their people around them. And I always get distressed when I listen to rhetoric that pits people against each other, because I don't think anybody gets the best from that situation. So I guess it would be nice if people, the language they used about others was kinder.
Barbara aimed to inspire others to positive action with her father's example, telling his story in a book published in 2014, through speeches at lectures and conferences in the UK, USA and the Czech Republic, and via a website showcasing material from her father's archives. After the launch of the website in 2021, Barbara spoke to Radio Prague once again.
Really, the idea of promoting his story in the way that we do is to remind people that this is how an individual got involved and went about doing something significant. And really, it's a kind of how-to manual as well. You know, how do you go about it? Well, you see a problem, you make sure you understand what the problem is, you get a sense that this is really not right, and then you gather around you a group of people who agree with you, and you go for it.
Barbara came to Czechia several times, accompanying her father on his trips when he was alive and continuing to visit the country after his death. She gave talks at Czech secondary schools and regularly attended the Forum 2000 conference. Her biography of her father, titled If It's Not Impossible, The Life of Sir Nicholas Winton, was also translated into Czech. The book was released on his 105th birthday, and she presented him with the first copy at a launch party at the Czech embassy in London. One of the more remarkable things about her father's story is that it went largely unrecognised for almost 50 years. It was only in 1988 when the story, including a heartwarming meeting with some of the children he had helped to rescue and their descendants, was featured in the BBC TV programme That's Life, that it finally reached the wider public. Barbara told Radio Prague in 2018 that until that moment, not even her family had really grasped the full extent of what her father had done.
None of us, including he, understood the implications of it till we began to meet the children themselves. And then it stopped being historical information and became about living people and their lives.
Even more remarkably, most of the children Winton rescued still don't know that they owe their lives to him. According to the BBC, of the 669 children saved from the gas chambers by Winton's efforts, more than 370 have never been traced, and may not even know the full circumstances behind how they survived the war. Barbara's website aims to help people who suspect that they or their family members may have been on one of the 8 trains that Winton helped organise from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia to Britain by making the archive materials publicly available so they can look for their names and find out for sure. After the 1988 TV programme was broadcast, Winton became something of a hero and the UK press dubbed him the British Schindler. Barbara helped to maintain contact with the Winton children in the years that followed and demanded that the world do more for refugees. Although, according to her son, Barbara felt that she was leaving the world too soon, she certainly left her mark on it and helped to ensure that her father's legacy will continue to outlive them both.
Anna Fodor with that report, coming your way on Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech radio. Time now to head for Prague's Jewish Quarter with Ruth Franková.
Jewish Quarter, also known as Josefov, is one of the most popular tourist destinations in Prague, located between the Old Town Square and the Vltava River. A Jewish ghetto was established here in the 12th century. At the turn of the 19th century, a large part of the ghetto was demolished. Fortunately, most of the significant buildings were saved from destructions, and today they represent the best preserved complex of historical Jewish monuments in Europe. Jakub Schwab, a tour guide and a longtime member of the Jewish community, kindly took me around the district. We started our walk on Pařížská Street, right next to the old new synagogue.
The Pařížská, so-called Paris Street, full of Prague's most luxurious brand stores, was built on the ruins of the former Jewish ghetto. On the turn of the 19th and the 20th century, actually the old Jewish quarter got almost completely torn down. With the exceptions of like six synagogues, the building of the Jewish town hall and most of the Jewish cemetery, and an entirely new Art Nouveau neighborhood was built on top of that.
Since much of Josefov used to be frequently flooded by the Vltava River, the terrain of the newly built neighborhood was raised by about 2 meters. As a result, the old new synagogue stands below the level of Pařížská, and there is a staircase leading to its entrance. The small building with a high saddle roof and late Gothic brick gables was initially called the New Synagogue because the old synagogue was already in existence on Dušní Street. When new synagogues were constructed at the end of the 16th century, the old New Synagogue got its current name.
The synagogue, which is called the Old New Synagogue, starts the celebration of its 750th anniversary this year. I say starts because the exact date of construction is uncertain, and it was built somewhere between 1270 and 1290, and it's considered to be the oldest constantly active synagogue outside Israel.
There are many legends tied to the old new synagogue, but the most famous one is the legend of Prague Golem, an artificial being made out of clay from the banks of the Vltava River. Its creator was Rabbi Lev, an important 16th century Talmudic scholar, Jewish mystic and philosopher, who for most of his life served as a leading rabbi in Prague and Mikulov.
There is basically a Kabbalistic concept that a person who is faithful and learned enough to know the exact sequence of the 27 letters of name of the god, so such a person can create a sort of robot and put it alive by placing a parchment with this sequence to the head of the robot. And by this, the robot receives the two lower stages of human soul, which means that the golem is able to obey instructions and to have unlimited energy, but it's not able to speak and it's not able to think, because these are attributes attached to the third level of the human soul.
The golem was supposed to protect the Jews against pogroms and help them with hard physical labor. Before the Shabbat, the Jewish day of rest, the rabbi removed the parchment from its head to keep the golem still. One day, however, he forgot to do so.
You know, in the traditional Jewish world until today, Friday afternoon is the biggest rush. Everybody prepares for the Shabbat, and also everyone tries to accomplish things that he was unable to accomplish throughout the whole week. So it's very easy to forget something. And simply the rabbi forgot to remove the parchment. So what happened? The energy concentrated in the golem started to look for the way out, and the golem was not receiving any instructions, so it started to set fire in the ghetto. And here inside the old new synagogue, the rabbi was approached by someone from the outside and said, "Rabbi, your golem is destroying the city. At that moment, the Maharal realized the mistake and made interruption in the service, went outside, found the Golem, and moved the parchment away.
After some thinking, the rabbi realized that it would be irresponsible to leave the Golem and its unbound energy in people's hands. He decided not to bring it back to life again. Instead, after Shabbat, he hid the Golem to the attic of the Old New Synagogue.
We are actually seeing the attic up here, and the ladder in the wall is basically considered to be the only, at this moment, known access to there. And up there, the Golem is sleeping and waiting for the first time in the history of the Prague Jews to come down and to help again.
And what we can hear right now is actually the bell on the Jewish town hall, which is another building that survived the clearance of the Jewish ghetto. So can you tell us a little bit more about this building, or rather it's a complex of several buildings?
We are basically talking about two buildings that we can see from this point: the Jewish town hall and the high synagogue closer to us. Now, both were initially built more or less at the same time, meaning on the break of the 15 and 1600s, by the same person, and the person's name was Mordechai Meisel, who at the same time was the head of the Jewish town, the head of the Jewish community, actually, as well as the core Jew of Rudolf II, the Emperor of Austria. Basically, the Jewish town hall was built for the purposes of the Jewish community to have all the offices for the officials as well. Now, the synagogue next to it, which is called the High Synagogue, as I have said, as we see, the three big Renaissance windows are at the first floor. That's why it's called High Synagogue, because the services were always held on the first floor, not on the street level.
Can we also mention the clock on the Jewish town hall? Because what's interesting is that it actually goes counterclockwise.
There are basically two clocks. Up at the tower there is a regular clock, and we heard the bells ringing. And down here is a Hebrew clock, which is very specific, as you have mentioned, because it's functioning also, and it goes from the right to the left. It's not exactly known why it was made like that. Probably the consideration of the clockmaster was, if by the Jews everything goes from the right to the left, so the clocks as well. We know it's not true, but it was done like this and became one of the Prague's very specific, very famous Jewish sites.
From the Jewish town hall, Jakub Schwab takes me toward the Jewish cemetery. We pause in front of two buildings, which are housing permanent exhibitions of Prague's Jewish museum.
The first one is the Clausen Synagogue, which was built in 1696. It's the only of the Prague's preserved synagogues that was built in the Baroque style. And the other building, which looks very old, but it's not that old, is called the Ceremonial Hall of the Prague's Jewish Burial Society. Now, the matter is that the building, which is built in neo-Romanesque style, was built only at the beginning of the 20th century, but the cemetery was not in use since 1787. So, at the very beginning, it was built for some ceremonial purposes of the Prague's Burial Society, but after a few years, yet before World War I, the Jewish Burial Society received entirely new building of headquarters on the other side of the cemetery. So this became, already before World War I, one of the first exhibition halls of the Jewish Museum of Prague.
Established in 1906, the Jewish Museum in Prague is in fact one of the oldest Jewish museums in Europe. At the core of its collections were items from synagogues that had been demolished as a result of the clearance of the Jewish ghetto. During the war, it became a safe haven for liturgical objects, books and documents from the defunct Jewish communities around the country.
As the Nazis decided to bring into Prague Jewish sacral objects from the whole of the era of today's Czech Republic, basically. So they used the structure and the people working in the Jewish Museum in order to make catalogs of that, because they wanted to know what they have, basically. After the war, though, most of the Jewish communities on the territory were not renewed anymore, and there was nowhere to return these objects. And in 1950, the museum got nationalized and worked as a state Jewish museum until it was turned into a corporation under control of the Federation of the Jewish Communities and the Ministry of Culture of the Czech Republic in the 1990s.
Apart from the Clausen Synagogue and the Ceremonial Hall, the Jewish Museum is also in charge of other buildings, including the Pinkas Synagogue, the second oldest preserved synagogues in Prague. Today it serves as a memorial to the nearly 80,000 Jewish victims of the Holocaust from the Czech lands. It also administers the Old Jewish Cemetery, one of the oldest surviving Jewish burial grounds in the world.
It was definitely not the first Jewish cemetery in Prague, but it's the oldest Jewish cemetery that we can see in Prague. No one knows when it was exactly established, but the earliest known gravestone is dated back to 1439 and belongs to Rabbi Avigdor Kara, who as a young man was one of the witnesses of the cruelest pogrom against the Jews in the history of Prague, which took place in 1389. The cemetery was used until 1787, when a law came from the court of Joseph II, the Emperor of Austria, which banned any future burials from the city centers. So the Jewish community first went to Žižkov, to other neighborhood of Prague, and since 1890, the current Jewish cemetery of Prague is being used at the Želivského metro station in the era of all the main cemeteries of Prague.
The most important figures buried at the Old Jewish Cemetery include the scholar and teacher Rabbi Lev and the mayor of the Jewish town hall, Mordechai Meisel. You can also see the tombstone of David Ganz, a Renaissance scholar, historian, mathematician and astronomer, and many others. Jakub Schwab says people interested in Jewish history should also venture outside the Jewish quarter to pay a visit to the Spanish synagogue located near the city's main train station.
One can also find a very beautiful exhibition about the Jewish life in Prague after the Second World War until the present. And that's something that, according to my opinion, shouldn't be missed and shouldn't be forgotten, that, you know, Jewish Prague is not only history, but also presence.
Report from Prague's Jewish Quarter by Ruth Frankova brings us to the end of today's program from Prague. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. And remember, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter as well. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for listening and take care.